Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Kind of a fun little piece in the PI put together by Vanessa Ho. And just kind of looking at the past decade of grand marshals for the Torchlight Parade, and happened to notice that it's been all guys. The past 10 years, the grand marshals have all been guys. In fact, Apollo Ono has got to do it twice in the past 10 years. This year it's Duff McKagan, who's from Guns N' Roses, the drummer from Guns N' Roses. And he lives here. He does a column over at The Stranger, and you know, so he's a local guy. But it was just one of those quirky little things that you go, So if you have a penis, your odds are better for getting chosen to be the Grand Marshal. But now let me talk to the president and CEO of Seafair, none other than Beth Knox. Hard to accuse you of being sexist, Beth.
Yeah, that's right. As a female CEO, I'm hardly biased in that direction. So I don't think that that's the case. That's not what we're dealing with here.
But, you know, it was pretty funny. It just brought to mind, you know, when you look at something like that, you go, oh, that's an oddity. You kind of scratch your head and wonder what's the process for selecting the Grand Marshal?
Yeah, and there is a lot that goes into the process. And I can assure you that having a female Grand Marshal is high on my list. And we've actually extended that invitation over the past few years to different females. Sometimes they're not available, and so then we have to move on. A big piece of it, though, is we put out through our Facebook and other social media the question, who would you like to see as Grand Marshal? And that's part of what drives our decision. It's also about timeliness. If someone about her and they are a legend in this town, when Coach Holmgren was, we in the Seahawks timely.
Boy, we're going to buy you a new cell phone.
Oh, am I cutting out? I'm sorry.
You're cutting in and out. We're getting every third word though, so we can patch it all together. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying that it's about the timeliness and who is relevant in the community at any given time and who's available.
So, like, I would assume that you like somebody that has local ties. That would be a consideration, right?
Yes. What we look for is someone who has national celebrity but has local ties.
Because I'm thinking, you know, have you ever asked, like, Queen Elizabeth?
I'm sorry, asked who?
Queen Elizabeth. She just celebrated her Diamond Jubilee. Maybe this is an honor she's never been asked to do.
No, but she doesn't have local ties to Seattle.
Oh, that's true. But we could do that 6 degree of separation thing. We could find something.
I'm sure we can find something.
We could find something somehow to tie her to Seattle here.
And, you know, and sometimes that is part of it. Our goal is to find the national celebrity that not only has local ties, but has made a contribution to this region. So those are some of the factors that go into it.
Do you consciously stay away from politicians, for example?
I guess we wouldn't necessarily disregard that. If someone is campaigning, then that is not the point of a grand marshal.
Right.
If Michelle Obama wanted to be in the Torchlight Parade, I probably wouldn't say no to that. we don't necessarily disregard anyone for a particular reason, but it does need to resonate. It needs to be relevant to this community. And again, looking for the national celebrity with local ties and a contribution.
So what are the responsibilities of the Grand Marshal? Do you have to teach him how to wave and smile? Because there's a certain rhythm to that waving.
There is a rhythm. And usually I get Miss Seafair to teach him. she definitely has the practice.
Yep. Yeah, there you go.
But responsibilities are really getting people excited about what Torchlight Parade represents in Seattle. And it represents all of the components that make up our region. It's what makes this region special. And the Grand Marshal is someone who can rally the troops and get everybody excited about seeing all that.
So are there any other public appearances required of the Grand Marshal, or is it just the participation in the parade? And that's the extent of what their involvement is.
Well, there's no other public appearances prior to that unless it makes sense. Sometimes the Grand Marshal will participate in a TV spot to promote the parade. Sometimes they'll be knighted prior to the parade. Sometimes, like Drew Carey, you know, he circled back around and actually helped with do the commentary for the Torchlight Parade with Steve Rabel and Angela Russell. So if there's an opportunity there, then we absolutely will take advantage of it.
Okay, so now what about the parade route this year? Because I remember last year there was some consideration having to be given to, you know, which route the parade would take and which trees could be trimmed. And are we still dealing with stuff like that?
We've called a truce, and we are still on 4th Avenue.
Yes, exactly.
There will be no trees that are trimmed this year, but so we'll just have the balloons work their way down around those tree branches. But for this year, it definitely is still on 4th Avenue, starting at the Seattle Center and going down to CenturyLink Field.
Because I was thinking, I remember that last year thinking, why would, you know, and it was Mayor Mike. I think he was the mover and shaker behind that one. I'm thinking, God, he can watch a tree branch or two fall. Give me a break. This is the Seafair Parade. It goes on 4th Avenue.
Right. It has to be on 4th Avenue. There's so many businesses that are counting on it to be on 4th Avenue. And there's all those people that stake their spot out. They build their living room or their viewing area and get all set at O'Dark 30 so that they can have their spot.
So what should we look for of particular interest in this year's parade?
You know, we have a few anniversaries this year. It's the 55th anniversary of our Seattle-Kobe sister city relationship, so we'll have a Kobe delegation. It's the 60th anniversary of the Chinese girls drill team. We also have a number of cultural performers, a Caribbean dance group. We've got a Taiwanese group. There's just a lot of different cultural performances on top of the traditional ones that we've had in the past. That's going to be a big highlight this year.
I think you need to set a drum set up in the car that Duff McKagan's going to be riding in.
Well, I don't know if you saw his blog today, but he's got 21 policies that he wants to implement now that he's Grand Marshal, and one of them is he wants to be in a carriage with horses. So I don't think there'll be a car.
Well, a carriage with horses. We've got our own royalty.
That's exactly right.
All right. Beth Knox, President and CEO, Seafair. Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking with you.
Likewise.
Take care. Like I said, this is a real funny article. Check it out. It's on the PI.com, put together by Vanessa Ho. And it just, I think it's happenstance. Over the course of the past 10 years, rather, it seems you have to have had a penis in order to be the Grand Marshal. It's all guys. 206-421-1000. What am I giving you that number for? Because I want to hear from you as to some suggestions. You heard Beth say that they have asked some females in the past, who do you think would make a great Torchlight Parade Grand Marshal? 206-421-1000 is the local. 877-397-COMO is the toll-free. We'll see what you think here in just a moment.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Kind of a fun article put together by Vanessa Ho, SeattlePI.com, where she, obviously tongue-in-cheek, I think, where she talks about the Seafair Grand Marshals being mostly a boys' club. In short, the past 10 years, one of the prerequisites for being the Grand Marshal was you had to have a penis. It's all guys. Now, Beth Knox says, you know, she's the president and CEO of Seafair. She says, no. I'm a woman. I'm not sexist. I've asked women to be here. You know, here's the criteria. And we'd love to have a woman as the Grand Marshal of the Seafair Parade. It just hasn't worked out for a while. So, coincidence? I don't know. 206-421, I don't think they're sexist. How can a woman be sexist? Well, I guess I could see a woman being sexist, but I don't think Beth is. 206-421-1000 is the local line. 877-397-COMO is the toll-free. That's 877-397-5666. We'll explore a lot of things, but one of the things I'd like to hear from you is, who do you think would make a great grand marshal for the Seafair Parade. Joyce in Issaquah, you're up on Newsline PM.
I think it's past time that a woman should be called, grand marshal. And I think Kathy Gertzen would make a good grand marshal.
I think that's an excellent choice. I totally would support that.
And I'm not accepting those excuses that they didn't find anybody.
Oh, you think that,
that
you
is
think,
not right.
So you think that this is deliberate, huh?
Oh, I do. I do. I think it's definitely deliberate. And it's time. It's, you know, I don't understand why it had to be a man.
But you, so you think
it's been done 5, 6, 7 years ago.
You think that women have been deliberately shunned from the Torchlight Parade Grand Marshal role?
You bet.
Okay. Well,
it looks like it to me.
I will take that under advisement, Joyce. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
But hey, you know what? I like that. I like the Kathy Gertzen suggestion. Boy, she'd make and she's got the wave down too. I'm telling you right now, Kathy, she knows how to wave with the complete hand. Because I've seen her wave sometimes with an incomplete hand, if you know what I mean, over in my direction. 206-421-1000 is the local line. 877-397-COMO is the toll-free. Let's get out here to Gail on a cell phone. What do you say, Gail?
I think Betty White.
Betty White?
Betty White. Kathy Gertzen is great. I love her dearly. But I think Betty White would be perfect.
I don't know. She's kind of old.
She could do it.
But she has no ties to the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, she likes it here.
Well, how do you know that?
I've read it. She's been here before.
I'm not poo-pooing your Betty White. I'm just challenging you because one of the criteria that they like to use is that, you know, yeah, they like someone with a great deal of familiarity with the public, but they also like to have someone with local ties. So, we'll notch it up there for Betty White as well. I think that's, you know, it's a reasonable approach. 206-421-1000. Let's try Debbie down in Centralia. You're up on Newsline PM, Deb.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Well, you know, I was going to go with Kathy Gertzen, and I still vote for that, but or someone like Jean Enerson. And I do not believe that the women have been shunned. I just think that in any organization you find that sometimes something might work out better and it's easier, you know, and it sounds like for the last several years it's been the men. But either one of those ladies, if they were asked, would be great.
I'll throw my support behind Kathy, and Jean Enerson would also be a good choice. I'm not going to dismiss that, but you know, look, I have my prejudices, and I'll go with Kath. Thank you, Debbie. And at least she didn't believe that women were being shunned. John on a cell phone, you're up. Newsline PM.
Sue Rahr. My former boss.
Oh, it's Urquhart. Hell,
she got Marshall written all over her.
I'm surprised you didn't nominate yourself.
Oh, no. I have, well, you know, that word you said. So I don't qualify.
I was going to say, no, you do qualify. You've got a penis.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
There you go.
Well, we need a woman in there, and she could do it, I guarantee you.
You know what? I think Sue Rahr would make a great, she'd make a great Grand Marshal. I agree with you. Thanks,
okay,
John.
There we go. Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Hang with us here. In a moment, we're going to explore the psychology behind the house you buy or want to buy.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Interesting article in Crosscut. And it's titled, Why We Ought to Get Real About Home Sizes. A lot of it deals with just the psychology of what we think of as a home. We'll explore that in a moment.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Like I said, interesting article in Crosscut, put together by Doug Pibble. Some of the things he says in here, actually, you know, when you finally read something or somebody says something and things really begin to gel, that's what I consider a really worthwhile piece of work. And that certainly is true with this article in particular. One of the things it starts off saying, you know, the real estate bubble that kicked off the 21st century taught us some things that a home isn't. It isn't a way to get rich quick. It isn't a cash machine. It isn't a speculative investment that's guaranteed never to lose value. But what's interesting, further on in the article, he said, you know, we were paying too much for houses that were too big. I totally agree with that. Traditionally, a home wasn't a speculative investment. In fact, houses typically appreciated not much faster than a savings account. You bought a house as a form of security. And when people bought houses, they intended to stay and they made a commitment to the community. Lasting connections with people and businesses. And once it became something that you just owned long enough for the big cash out, those connections were lost. I just find that to be so true. And one of the points he makes in this article is that small is beautiful. Smaller houses cost less to build, takes less furniture to fill them. They cost less to heat them and cool them. And that is so true. And I can see that in the generation, in the millennial generation coming up. It seems to me that the expectations for the homes they use, it's a different psychology. Dr. Kit Yarrow is a consumer research psychologist and a professor of psychology and marketing at Golden State University in San Francisco. Haven't talked to you for a while. Golden Gate University, excuse me. Haven't talked to you for a while. How are you there, Dr. Kit?
I've been missing you, Ken. I know it's been a long time.
It's glad to have you. Good to have you back here. Glad to have you
Thank
back
you.
Here. So let me ask you, is there a psychology evolving here in terms of what we expect to resonate within us in terms of the home that we own or make the house that we make a home?
You know, there's some conflicting things, I think, within people. I mean, first of all, it's sort of an American philosophy, bigger is better. And you sort of, you know, understand how people wanted bigger and bigger houses. And then all of a sudden, I think people recognize that the what it takes to maintain a big house, not just in terms of the cost of energy and so on, but just, you know, upkeep, decorating, cleaning, and so on, is exhausting. And the movement towards simplification in our lives, you know, I think was the pendulum swinging backwards, where people are really kind of understanding that smaller and tidier makes more sense. Now, on the other hand, you know, we used to use our community much more, you know, as a sort of like this common space. And so you needed a smaller house because you really used your place of worship, your, you know, local parks and so on. And I think since they've, you know, there's a little bit more conflict in the places where people congregate together, people also want their homes to be, you know, ever more a place of sanctuary, which is, you know, I think there's a limit to how small houses are going to get.
But people used to have roots. As you were speaking, you reminded me of something. I was born and raised in the Bronx. And I was I was raised on the absolute same street that my mom was raised in. My grandparents lived, and this isn't an apartment building, but it was their home. They lived in the same apartment building for 50 years. And the people in the neighborhood had at least, you know, most of them had at least the same kind of history. And it was an entirely different atmosphere in terms of where you had your roots, and everybody did know everybody else and everybody else's business.
No, it's a good thing. You know, it's a really great way to connect people, and also the sense of responsibility. The author of that article just makes such a good point about how when we started buying houses for investments, you know, we lost so much of that sense of buying, you know, a place that's ultimately going to be our place in the community. And then we have an obligation to other people. We have an obligation to our front yards. You know, we have fortifying connections that, you know, make us feel better about ourselves and our lives. And, you know, hopefully that'll be rebuilt a little bit again as people look at their house as more as a more permanent place.
And that's what I was going to ask. Given the bust of the bubble, the housing bubble, are people, are they beginning to trend toward a different philosophy, psychology, outlook, you know, what they're anticipating from the home that they are now able to buy?
I think home's the optimal word. You know, it's not a house anymore. We're kind of going back to it being a home and more realistic. And, you know, the sales of the higher-end houses are, you know, not rebounding as quickly as, you know, some of the more moderately priced houses. But, you know, another sort of psychological construct that again, you know, it's sort of a complicated issue, because the other thing is that it's really hard to go backwards. You know, it's much easier to keep aspiring to more and more in your life, granite and countertops and, you know, more appliances and air conditioning and all these things that we didn't really have in the 50s and 60s. And it's very hard to say, you know, I don't really need that. My parents didn't need it, so I don't need it. That going back in the other direction doesn't work as well, you know, and people really did become accustomed to, you know, more and better and in some cases bigger in their houses. So we'll see what happens with that. You know, I don't have a crystal ball, but there's really great information supporting both, you know, the simpler, easier to maintain, less expensive home, you know, and also, you know, people still being sort of aspirational in their housing needs.
Because I think the generation that's referred to as the millennials, for example, I have a couple of kids in there, and they have an entirely different attitude about houses, you know, that they would like to live in for, you know, however number of years. And it's not that they would want something huge. They just want something that they feel is comfortable and warm and inviting and fits them and their personalities and their friends and their family. So it's you know, and that seems to be a shift in terms of what people were looking for in houses, you know, 15 years ago.
That's definitely a shift. And, you know, and it's interesting, too. The same is true with the cars that the millennials are interested in, if they're even interested in one. I mean, a lot of that generation, you know, they don't aspire to have a house in the same way that other generations have, you know, owning a piece of land and the earth and, you know, a little sanctuary is a less appealing concept to this generation than previous ones. And, you know, and we even see that in you know, they don't feel a sense of permanency with a lot of the products that they're, that other generations really felt like were permanent, like jewelry, like cars. You know, a lot of the investment sort of products, they want more turnover and they want more flexibility in their life and they want more, you know, simplicity.
Yeah, they like, one of the things is like they love the ability to travel, for example, you
exactly.
know, to see different. But let me, you mentioned something earlier I want to explore just a little bit more deeply. And you're talking about the appliances and the granite countertops and, you know, all the accoutrement that goes with, you know, a lavish lifestyle in these homes. Is there any comparison, you know, because back in the 50s and 60s, that was all, it was more fundamental, but people wanted the washer and dryer. That was unheard of to have those in your home.
Yeah.
They wanted wall-to-wall carpeting. That was sometimes unusual to have in your home. They wanted the TV. That was the new technology at the time. You know, so there was some of that going on, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah, but that, yeah, and that's really kind of what I'm thinking is that, you know, with every decade that goes by, things that were considered to be luxuries, you know, are suddenly de rigueur. So, you know, for example, most houses didn't have air conditioning. You know, when I was a kid, for example, though, God, I'm aging myself. But, you know, and now if you live in someplace hot, you know, you just have it, and it isn't really a thought. You're going to open your windows, and it becomes
the necessity that it wasn't. Dr. Kit Yarrow, the consumer research psychologist and professor at Golden Gate University in San Francisco. Oh, we can't let that much time go by again. We're going to get you back.
Good deal.
Right.
I look forward to
thanks.
It again.
Thanks for being here.
Okay.
Hang
Thanks,
with us.
Bye.
We're going to talk about weather with my favorite fear-mongering meteorologist.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So for all the weather whiners out there that are going, this has been such a terrible month. There's been hardly any sunshine, and it's cold, and I can't believe it. It's June. What's wrong? What's wrong? I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to tell you, I'm looking at the southwest right now. 105, 108, 104, swinging through Texas, 93, 92, 94, swinging through the deep south, 89, 90, 88, up the east coast, oh God, 95, 96, 100, and those are the temperatures, never mind the compensation for the humidity, which pushes that heat index up to over 100. Give me this weather any day of the week. Scott Sistick, my favorite fear-mongering meteorologist, joins me here this afternoon. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Ken. I'm here to tell you it's going to snow. No. That would be like what everyone's probably expecting by now, at least out here.
You know what? You hardly ever hear me whine about the weather.
Right.
True?
And I pretty much like this weather as well.
I'm fine with this.
Yeah.
I don't want 97 degrees.
Yeah, we were just looking at some of the other cities here right before we came on. Like Baltimore was 99 right in the
last
hour.
That is a hellhole.
And that, you know, that is not a Phoenix 99. That is not a rare, you know, when it gets to the 90s here, you know, it gets hot here on occasion, but it's really dry. That is not a dry heat.
I'm so tired of hearing that stuff about dry heat. Dry, right. 110 degrees is 110 degrees.
Right.
Now, sure, the 99 in Baltimore is going to feel like 110 because of the humidity.
But 110 in a dry heat, you can cool off better
but it's still hot. But it's a dry heat. So's an oven. I'm not going to stick my head in there.
No. But your sweat will work better. So when you start sweating in the oven, at least you'll cool off for a few seconds.
So what are the projections right now? Because people have been complaining that we've had some bad summers here over the past couple of years. And I think they're looking for something a little bit more hot and sweaty.
I don't have that in the forecast here. Actually, after today, we kind of go back to the cool and showery here for the next probably good 5 to 6 days here. And so back into the 60s, I think all the highs on our 7 day this week are going to be in the 60s. We may get a 70 toward the end of the next Thursday, Friday. But they just did today issue the new summer outlook. They issue it once a month. They kind of put out these 30-day forecasts and these 90-day forecasts. And the summer forecast, so July, August, September, they're now trending like neutral for Seattle, which is different because in the past it's been always cooler. Like for the last several months with La Nina, it's been saying cooler, cooler, cooler than normal for the Northwest. Now we're kind of neutral. So like kind of a normal month, we don't really have anything weighing it hotter or colder than normal, which is an improvement if you want warmer weather. But the flip side was almost the entire rest of the nation, probably about 90% of the country, is now painted as it's going to be a really hot summer. Hotter than even normal for them.
And I don't think that people here genuinely appreciate not having to contend with those kinds of temperatures.
Right. And when I was growing up, my dad was in the military. We spent 3 years in North Carolina when I was like in junior high. And that was just enough for me to learn that I never wanted to live in the South or on the East ever again, because, you know, that's just completely oppressive. And you come back here, and I grew up around here. Most of the time was here, and, you know, used to this 60s and 70s where 80 kind of feels hot, and it's just...
That's where I start to whine, and I admit that I am the absolute oddity. But, you know,
I don't think you're much of an oddity. I think
73 degrees to me, I could live forever.
Yeah, I could. And I could even go colder than that. I could be in the 60s.
I'm saying for the hottest.
Oh, for the hottest. Yeah, I could be too. And it's like if Anchorage were a bigger city and it were closer to like the mainland, you know, I could see myself living there someday. But I think there are a lot of people. And when we talk about the sunshine, we get a lot of email from people saying, you know, don't always trumpet the sunshine and the warmth as a great thing, because I like the clouds. I like the rain. I like it cooler. And there is I don't think it's a majority, but it's a pretty large silent minority.
I think it is. And here's how I look at this. I look at it. I think it is much easier to get warm than it is to cool off.
Right.
Unless you've got a pool in the backyard,
right.
Which
and how many of us
not
have
very
that?
Many of us do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You can always put on another coat.
Yep.
Or sit by the fire. But you can't sit by the air conditioner. Leaving the freezer open doesn't work.
I could
for about an hour.
Man, let me tell
then you
something.
You got to go to the store and replace everything.
I have ice bags all over the place, right. Man. Ice bag and a fan. I'm one happy little puppy. So traditionally we have summer start the 5th of July.
5th of July is what we joke. I know some in the weather community say it's the 12th, but I kind of go with the 5th because the 4th is statistically the wettest day of July. And it's really funny how that works out. And then usually like the 5th, we start our dry season, and it goes until like early to mid-September, and then we're right back into
the rain again. So we should look for what's probably considered an average summer.
An average summer, which will seem warm because the last few have been cooler.
Okay.
So
I wouldn't mind some great explosive thunderstorms, too.
We'll see.
I love
nothing in the next month or at least the next week, but we'll see.
I love a good thunderstorm.
Yeah, you're in the wrong place for that.
All right. Hang with us. Newsline PM continues. Thanks, Scott.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today as much as I did, and I'll invite you back to beginning tomorrow precisely at 6 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock. Boy, this Jerry Sandusky thing is getting curiouser and curiouser. Now his adopted son is saying he was abused by his father. Hey, one favor to ask of you here for the evening. Take care of each other out there, okay? Okay.